Keith McPherson on the Fan. This is KM to AM. Joining me right now is Laura Albanese, who writes for Newsday, covering your Mets, your Yankees, covering baseball. I had the pleasure of meeting Laura 2 years ago at MLB Network on the show Off Base, and I've been following her stuff ever since. Laura, are you there?
I am here, and thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, appreciate it. This rally pimp guy, I saw him on the broadcast, but I wasn't listening to the broadcast. And then I saw you wrote about him. I'm sorry, I can hear myself echoing, so maybe you're... Are you on speaker?
No.
Oh, I don't know. Are you listening to the radio?
No.
Okay,
Zoom. It's a mystery. Man, I don't know. Maybe I should go to another part of the apartment. Let's see.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm hearing myself. I'm looking at Zoo. Zoo's like, she's on speaker. I'm like, I don't know. You said you're not.
No.
Okay. So I guess I got to just shut up and let you talk. Go for it.
I mean, sure. You know, I can talk for miles. So, yeah. So this dude, his name is Max Wiener. He's the rally pimp. And basically what happened, it was game 2 of a doubleheader early in April, and the Mets hadn't won yet. And they hadn't gotten a hit. Or they were like 1-for-24 or something absurdly bad. And they hadn't gotten a run in 2 games. And suddenly, like, out of nowhere, this dude who looks like he skinned a Muppet and put it on his back shows up on the scoreboard. And Pete Alonso hits a home run, and then somebody else hits a home run. And ever since then, they've been on fire. So, he became kind of like a little bit of a legend. His family has, like, a 20-pack of season tickets. And he thrifts all his clothes, and he's got, like, all these, like, really ostentatious coats and tracksuits.
Yeah, very bright.
Very bright.
Very 80s.
You know? Very 80s. He says it's like a Rick James, Elton John, David Bowie thing. And, so he's, everyone thinks, you know, that they're hitting and they're pitching better because of Mr. Rally Pimp, or Dr. Rally Pimp, as he likes to be called.
Dr. Rally Pimp. He's not actually a doctor, though.
No, he's a comedian.
I mean, whatever works. I said, you know, the Yankees have this dog thing going on. We've all run with that. Sometimes you just need a thing, something to believe in, something to change the vibes and the energy. And I know you can speak to the vibes and energy between the first homestand and the second one. Tell us just how it felt in Citi Field. I haven't been out there yet, but it was completely day and night. They go from 1-5 to 5-1.
I mean, day and night is the way I would describe it, too. I mean, it was like, and you know, Mets fans, they can be a little bit morose, and understandably so. But it was like funereal.
Mets fans?
Yeah, so they were like, it was like a funeral procession there the first week, you know. Once the losses started piling up, I mean, people were already talking like, oh, is Carlos Mendoza the right guy for this? And again, it's 5 games in. And then you go back and, you know, recently people are having fun. They're kind of like, they're doing like chest bumps in the outfield. People are laughing in the clubhouse. They're enjoying themselves. And yeah, the vibes are pretty immaculate right now. I mean, that's what it is. When it comes to winning in New York, I think one of the things that a lot of people were wondering last year is like, okay, so this team, this is supposed to be an incredible team, the highest payroll in baseball, what's off? And I can't say it's all chemistry because that's ridiculous. It's not all chemistry. They obviously had injuries and things didn't work out the way that it should, but chemistry does help. I do genuinely believe that. And so far, it looks like they're building something nice there in Flushing.
Yeah, I agree. I mentioned how the pictures came out of these guys all wearing blue Nike Tech suits as they're going on the road to L.A. So, like, a team that is willing to wear matching suits, like grown men, millionaires that are like, hey, yeah, let's all match. Like, there's something there. I heard a quote from Reed Garrett talking about how they all hang out, how they all talk together. Like, there's a good clubhouse vibe. He said, as a collective unit, we're all pretty close. We all talk to each other. We all hang out, mess around, play games in the club. So it's clearly a difference, right? We've heard over the last couple years that there was a cancer in the clubhouse and the clubhouse wasn't right and all these other things. So I think that's a huge part of it. I want to tip my cap to Carlos Mendoza and David Stearns for obviously Stearns putting together the right pieces and Mendoza talking to these guys and keeping these guys together early on when they could have just nosedived and they could have packed it in.
Yeah, and I think it's 100% true because, I mean, if you put yourself in Mendoza's shoes, you've been waiting for this opportunity basically your entire life. He's been a coach since, I think, 2009 in the Yankee system. So you finally get a chance to manage in New York and you're losing your first 5 games. Most people would lose their cool in that situation, but he certainly didn't. He really, really kind of kept a steady hand. And I think that helped a lot. I think that kind of imbued a little bit more confidence in the guys around him. And the thing, you talk about chemistry, it's like, oh, you know, it's overblown in sports. And I do think it is a little bit overblown in sports. But one of the things that Reed Garrett said yesterday, post-game, he was like, well, you know, there's something concrete here. His splitter is better. His slider is better. He's been talking to Adam Ottavino. He's been, talking to Edwin Diaz. And when you have that sort of camaraderie where you can go up to somebody and be like, hey, am I holding this? Are my mechanics looking okay? How would you do this? How would you do this differently? And you can learn from them, then the entire team gets better.
Yeah, I think this guy is someone that deserves more talk, more light. Last year when he came up in July, he said, obviously I would like to have a little bit longer opportunity, but that's got to be earned. Looking forward to that opportunity to try and earn a longer stay. And I believe he came up right around the deadline once D-Rob was traded away. And it was quiet for him last year. But so far this year, I had a stat that I ripped from SNY Mets. They said Reed Garrett has struck out 17 of the 31 batters he's faced to start 2024. He's given them multiple innings of just pure dominance. It clearly looks like a guy that's ready to seize his opportunity this time around. And all offseason, I had said, one thing for sure is this Mets bullpen is going to be improved, and we're seeing that already.
Yeah, when David Stearns came in, one of the things about him, and I'm sure people have talked a lot about it, is that he's really good at bullpen construction. And we saw the issues with the Mets bullpen last year. Obviously, losing Edwin Diaz had a huge detrimental effect, but it also created a sort of like cascading situation in the bullpen where they were having to rely on, arms you wouldn't necessarily call high leverage arms in high leverage situations. So if the game was tight in the seventh or eighth inning, you were holding your breath the entire time because they just didn't have the personnel for it. Now you have, again, Reed Garrett's been doing great. Drew Smith has looked pretty unhittable, which last year he was good for the first half, not so great in the second half. And then Ottavino's been doing a fine job, and Edwin Diaz is Edwin Diaz. And there was a slight downtick in Diaz's velocity, but there's not really any concern there because he's getting guys out. He looks like himself.
Yeah, Jorge Lopez. They don't even have Fujinami. Reed Garrett, going back to him, he didn't even make the opening day roster. I had another stat about him. He was a 16th-round pick. He was DFA'd by Detroit, Baltimore, Washington. He had 2 years in Japan. This is a journeyman. This is a guy who's really getting his opportunity, and he's making it happen. I call him the Make It Happen Mets. Another thing with the Mets, you don't have to worry too much about the bullpen when you're blowing teams out. A 9-1 win today. 6-1 win last Friday. They put up 16 on the Braves. And I've been talking about how they're not just doing it hitting the long ball. They will sacrifice bunt, timely hitting, a slap single, score two. Like, what are you seeing that's changed in the Mets lineup?
A lot of it, I think, well, one of the big things is the fact that Eric Chavez is back as the hitting coach. Mm-hmm. He was the bench coach last year, and I think a lot of hitters kind of missed his influence because he was so integral to what they were able to do in 2022. And another thing is, like, we're seeing guys play to their strengths. I don't want to see Jeff McNeil try to hit, like, 400-foot bombs. I want to see him put the ball in play because that's what he does, that he hits for average. And so when you go back to those fundamentals, kind of the see the ball, hit the ball thing that the Mets are doing well, then maybe you're not putting as much pressure on other guys in the lineup. Pete Alonso's going to hit his home runs. You mentioned they're bunting more. This sort of small ball approach works for them because they do have some speed. And it kind of just bites teams when they least expect it. There were times last season where, they would go down a run or a game would be tied, and you'd immediately be like, well, there's no way they're going to win this one. But because they're pesky, they're annoying to the other team, now you're like, okay, maybe they can come back. I was doing the math yesterday, and like during this little stretch, 38 of their runs have come in the seventh inning or later. And so that's actually more than half of the runs that they've scored have come in the seventh inning or later. And in addition to that, when they go down, they don't go down for good. Most of those games, most of these wins so far, the other team has scored first.
Yeah, you said where I was going next. We're on the phone with Laura Albanese. She's a writer-reporter for Newsday. Straight out of Brooklyn College. Brooklyn, what up? You said that they come back. Mets fans can't turn the game off on the team. You can't quit on the team. You can't turn a game off where they go down 4-0 against the Braves because they're coming back. And they've done that so many times. They're like the cardiac kids, never say die. That is what you want in a team. Like, you want a team that you can watch 27 outs, 9 innings, and feel like they can make it happen. That is a team that finds a way to win in crunch time in the toughest situations. I feel like the start of the season, we judge the book by its cover. You're a writer. You're college educated. You can't judge a book by its cover. Where do you think this book is going for the Mets? Do you think that they can be a postseason team? I know it's early. The cover was just the first two series.
I mean, I even said it before the season. I think if they get, like, the real J.D. Martinez into this lineup and he's, and, you know, his back is okay and he can hit, I think he could be a really big factor. If they get Kodai Senga back, this is a legitimate wild card team. You know, I don't think they're going to be catching up with the Braves. But also, the baseball season is long and it's weird and stranger things have happened. I do think they have the talent to eke into the wild card. But more than that, I think, like, if they're in play, obviously, during the trade deadline, I think David Stearns has proven he has the ability to make the right acquisitions to kind of put them over the edge. So, when I saw this team in the first week of the season, I think, like, most people were like, well, you know, this is going to be a long year. But it was just too early and too soon. And I think a lot of that has to do with with everyone remembering 2023 and going in with so much optimism. And then, you know, by the time the trade deadline comes along, goodbye Max Scherzer, goodbye Justin Verlander, you know, we're going to overhaul this entire thing. And you have David Stearns saying, well, we hope to be competitive in 2024, which, you know, as much as a rebuild is good and necessary, you can't really rebuild in New York. The fans don't like it. It doesn't play here. So they have to be really strategic with how they retooled their roster.
Yeah. Another thing I wanted to ask you, you know, speaking of New York and fans in New York, what do you make of the attendance, the quote unquote low numbers, not over 20,000 at most of the games? And obviously Doc Gooden's ceremony drew just a little bit over 30,000. I feel like there's a lot of conversation online and on the fan about, you know, the fans not coming out to support the Mets early on this season.
Yeah, I've definitely seen indication of that. I think there's a few things at play. There is things like the weather in April has been horrible. There wasn't the same enthusiasm as last year. I think fans really got burned last year because they thought this was going to be the year when, you know, Steve Cohen opened up his pocketbook and he was like, all right, we're gonna make it rain. We're gonna get all these players. World Series or bust, and it was a bust. So I think that's definitely a thing. And you know, I think as good as this run has been, they still have a lot to prove. In addition to that, you know, they don't really have the kind of marquee stars that they have had in the past. I mean, you would remember like DeGrom Day, and people would come out in droves because you want to see Jacob DeGrom pitch. And yeah, of course they have Pete Alonso, and yeah, of course they have Francisco Lindor, and these are guys that, you know, put butts in the seats, but it's not quite the same as firepower, star power, I would say, that they've had in previous years.
Another thing, as we watch the Mets head out to L.A. to face the Dodgers, the Dodgers and Mets series is always entertaining, but the Dodgers aren't as almighty as everyone thought. So you just spoke about how, you know, fans thought that the Mets were going to spend. Well, the Dodgers go out and spend a record amount. They just lost to the Mets division rival, the Nationals, back-to-back games. The Nationals take that series in Dodger Stadium. And before that, the Padres, who had, you know, just as high of a payroll almost as the Mets last year, the Padres, who traded pieces away, including Juan Soto, they were able to take two from the Dodgers. The Dodgers have lost four of their last five games, and I think this is a perfect setup for the Mets to go in there and take a series. How do you feel about the Mets going to face the almighty Dodgers this weekend?
I mean, you want to do it in the situation that the Mets are in right now. They have a lot of confidence. They're going into enemy territory. This could be like a show me type of series. This is the type of series where, you know, they're lined up to face Yoshinobu Yamamoto, the guy that got away. And the Dodgers, you know, they're the indication of, like, you can't predict baseball season. You have this team of superstars, but it's such a quirky sport, and I think it's a really unique sport in that you cannot, and the Mets have proven this, you cannot buy your way into a championship. Do I think the Dodgers are going to stay bad? Absolutely not. No, I think they're a very good team. They're too talented to not do well this season. But I do. I don't necessarily think that they're going to blow everybody away in the way that people predicted.
Last thing for you. I know you cover the Yankees, too. I see you sometimes on Yes Network in the background of the shots. Any word on the Yanks? Anything to add about the other team in New York?
I mean, I haven't covered them in the last couple of days because I've been on Mets duty. But, you know, the one thing I do love is when both teams are clicking. You know, the Yankees obviously have that never-say-die attitude. They're getting contributions from all over the lineup. And, you know, it's so far been a really promising season. There is nothing like the electricity at Yankee Stadium when Juan Soto comes up to bat. What we're seeing from Anthony Volpe, obviously, you know, Aaron Judge is going to be Aaron Judge no matter what. And it's the type of thing that can really grip a city. I'm excited to see where this season's going to go.
Yeah, the Yankees were in Toronto, so when they come back home this weekend, will you be there Saturday for John Sterling's ceremony?
This is so lame of me. I wanted to, because I love John, I wanted to go so bad, but real talk, I had to use my comp time before it expired, so I had to take Saturday off.
Understandable. I'm trying to scroll back to find your tweet about John. Can you quickly tell us the story that you tweeted about with John Sterling? I literally laughed out loud because I know John, and that's such a John thing to do.
So good. It was so, so good. So it was a couple of years ago, and like I get kind of nervous on radio and on TV, but I was especially nervous when I was way younger. And we had Newsday had these like fourth inning spots where you go in the booth with John and Susan, and I was always sweating it. I thought I was going to say something stupid. I thought I was going to mess something up.
I think
that's natural. And he would always like calm me down and help me out. And then one day I was on the radio and he's like, "Well, have you heard the song Laura?" And I'm like, "No, I haven't. It's from this murder mystery, and named Laura." And he starts singing it to me on the radio. I'm like, "This is incredible." So I go home, whatever. And a couple days later, I get a call from the clerk in my office. And he's like, "There's this guy who keeps calling and keeps saying, you know, like he's John Sterling. And he sounds like John Sterling. Why would John Sterling be calling the office?" So I work remotely. And eventually, I guess John calls back. They give him my cell phone number. He leaves a voicemail. And it's like, "Laura, I've been looking for you everywhere. I wanted to let you know that the movie Laura is playing on PBS tonight at 9:30. I was dying.
Because John is still in the like 70s.
It.
You can't text him. He uses phones, landlines.
Yes. It was so great. I saved the voicemail. I emailed it to myself so I would never lose it. I'm like, this is so incredible.
I've been searching for you everywhere via telephone. And
landline. And I'm like, oh, this is amazing. I'm never going to forget this story for the rest of my life. But it's just an indication of how like considerate, thoughtful he is.
Yeah,
that he didn't know me that well, but he still did went through all these hoops just so I could watch Laura on PBS.
It meant something to him. That's great. Laura, you're great. Everyone, this is Laura Albanese. You can find her on Twitter at Albanese Laura. She writes for the Mets and the Yankees, covering baseball for Newsday. Thank you for joining us tonight. That was awesome.
Thanks for having me. I had a lot of fun.
Yeah, you did a good job. You didn't say anything stupid, I promise.
See, maybe next time.
All right, bye. We'll talk soon.